Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Late Night.
This is Late Night
on Sports Radio WEEI. Boston Sports Talk for Insomniacs and the Graveyard Pack. Let's get it going with Patrick Gilroy. Late Night on Sports Radio WEEI.
It is Late Night right here at Sports Radio WEEI. It's Patrick Gilroy. We'll make our way together tonight up until 2 o'clock in the morning. As always, the number to join us here is 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And we will do quite a bit of Patriots coming up in a little while tonight, but we will open the show tonight. Just a few leftover thoughts from last night's Celtics game, and not to mention the fact that there were some pretty crazy theories thrown out there today, both on this station and on the station across the street, that we absolutely need to touch on. But before I get to that, I find it funny because, you know, yes, I get home late or early, depending on how you look at it, you know, 3:15-ish. And now what I've been doing is going to my dad's to check on him. He lives about 15 minutes from me, so I've been getting home at closer to 4. Then the alarm goes off between 6 and 6:30, right? So this morning, I'm up at 6 o'clock. I got a whole 2 hours of sleep, and, you know, I'm listening to the morning show, and they're talking about Meter, and I think it's pretty cool that Meter's back here. I mean, that's a voice that I grew up listening to, and, you know, he's doing the show prior to mine, so it's kind of cool to come in here and get to know him a little bit. But one of the things that they said was that Meter had a hard time with the phone number last night, and I didn't hear it when it happened. But I come in here tonight, and he's got this piece of paper with the phone number, like, written in big, big numbers, draped over the computer screen right in front of him. So I hope that Meter didn't screw the number up tonight, because it's right here, it's right in front of him, and I want to thank him for this service, because I, too, have worked for a dozen radio stations back in the day. And I got to tell you, sometimes I have screwed up the phone number. I gave my cell phone number out once about 3 years ago on a different station. So, you know, thank you, John Meter Perel. The number's right in front of me, and I'm going to keep it right here tonight. But it is Sports Radio WEI. It is Late Night. Room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. And so in the aftermath of the Celtics game last night and then what happened after the game, and look, both are huge stories. First, of course, you got the Celtics having just another huge win. So when I say another huge win, I mean this is a team that continues to, you know, do what they need to do against the best teams in the East, right? So, you know, the one knock on this team has been their inability to play well against the teams that they should beat relatively easily. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to sort of figure this thing out. Then they get up for the bigger games. So now they've beat the Sixers, they beat the Bucks, they beat Toronto a couple of times. These are all the teams that are directly in front of them. The Pacers a couple weeks back. You know, it's been a weird season where when you look at the direct competition in front of them, the teams that the Celtics thought that they should be better than, those guys, they've had their way for the most part with those quote-unquote elite teams. But when it comes to everybody else, that's when there's been this significant drop-off for the Celtics, this inability to sort of rise to the occasion. And it's those games that have really caused the crux of their psychological problems, their problems that they've had in the locker room. It's those games that have led to the players-only meetings, the players-only sort of get-togethers where the coaching staff is, you know, kept out of the locker room. It's those games that have led to Kyrie Irving meeting with the players one-on-one. It is those games where the Celtics have underperformed that have led to Kyrie Irving being ultra-critical, sometimes publicly, of his younger teammates. And I find it fascinating going back to the game in Orlando on Saturday night. So going all the way back there, now that's a game where the Celtics, they should have won that game, and they should have won it relatively easily. If you watch that game, you know the Celtics played like dog you know what in the first half, yet they were still maintaining somewhere between a 6 and 11 point lead for the most part in that first half, playing relatively terrible basketball because they're better than the Magic. They've got a lot more talent than the Magic, and if the Celtics had put forth just, I don't know, a 70% effort, that thing should have been, I don't know, a 12-14 point victory without too much effort, right? So the Celtics, they completely collapse in the second half. They find themselves down by 9 with a minute and 20-ish to go, and they make this furious run to try and get back in the game, and they actually successfully do get back in the game. So they force this thing to be a 2-point game with about 3 seconds left in the game, and of course we all know what happens. The first incident that happens is in the timeout leading up to the final play of the game. Brad Stevens calls the play. The play is clearly not designed for Kyrie Irving. Kyrie is visibly upset about the play call. Kyrie, not only visibly upset, you can see him chastising his coach with his younger teammates surrounding him, which is just, in my opinion, a huge sin. It's a big no-no. You can't do it if you want to consider yourself a leader, especially a leader of a team this young. It's not the tone that you want to set. It is not the example that you would hope that the leader of your franchise is setting for his younger teammates. So in the aftermath of all of this, Tomasi this morning on the morning show, they're talking about this, and he says, I've got a theory here. I've got an idea. I think that Kyrie Irving didn't play in the Brooklyn game because I think Brad Stevens benched him. I think that he was benched for the game. And the guy sort of poked him a little bit and tried to get out of him that maybe, is this a joke? Is this a crazy, fan theory that's not real? And he said, no, I think that there's some legitimacy to what I'm saying here. It's his belief that Brad Stevens has got enough juice to potentially bench Kyrie Irving for a game. I don't think he does. I think that if this were, let's go back to Jordan Crawford or even Isaiah Thomas or Eddie House or any other guard that's been here in the last 20 years. Rajon Rondo maybe, but he's kind of bitchy, so that would be tough. Any other guard that's been here, maybe I could believe it. But you've got a guy here that's going to be a max player, a guy here that has had an up-and-down year with the Celtics as far as wins and losses go, and he's a guy that is verbally committed to the team, but let's be honest here. A verbal commitment from Kyrie Irving is not exactly, a lock, stock, and barrel type of deal. So the Celtics are still, in a position where they've got to kiss his ass just a little bit here to keep him engaged, to keep him wanting to continue down that path of signing this long-term extension, because if he walks away for nothing, the Celtics find themselves in a bit of a world of hurt, because that means everything that Danny Ainge has been able to flip and accomplish here, meaning flipping Marcus Thornton, a trade exception, and a bag of balls for Isaiah Thomas, building up Isaiah Thomas to a MVP caliber player, and then flipping IT immediately following the injury for a guy like Isaiah Thomas, that's incredible value and the right way to build a team. And it's certainly the right way to grab yourself a quote-unquote transformative talent. And I'm not sure that the best thing to do to keep a guy like Kyrie Irving, who is showing LeBron James tendencies. He is, whether we like it or not. And I'm not talking about LeBron on the court. I'm talking about some of the things that have driven me crazy, driven other NBA fans crazy over the years about LeBron. I got to tell you, Kyrie has got some of that in him. And sometimes I find myself sort of looking the other way. And to be honest with you guys, I don't like it when he pulls this stuff, for the same reason that I don't like it when LeBron James pulls this stuff. The difference is Kyrie's a Celtic, and I'm trying to embrace this new Kyrie Irving era. So again, Tomasi, he throws out there that it's his belief that the Celtics, Brad Stevens specifically, benched Kyrie Irving for that Brooklyn game. He believes that there was no thigh injury and that was a punishment for openly questioning, openly chastising his head coach at the tail end of the previous game in Orlando. And the Celtics fans were so engaged here last night. I feel like we had an incredible four-hour discussion together. But that's a theory that I didn't even come to think of at all. Like, I hadn't heard it from anybody. Crazy Celtics Twitter had not floated anything like that. But Tomasi's been kind of connected. He's been covering the Celtics for WEEI.com pretty much full-time this year. I mean, he's had some great stuff with some awesome insight. And the question really becomes, is that a possibility? Because we saw how well Kyrie played last night at the Garden against Toronto on national TV. Arguably, his best game as a Celtic, 27 points, 18 assists, including the dagger late in the fourth quarter to seal the win. That 30-foot three-point field goal. Just an absolute FU type of shot that he hit. That's what you want from your, legitimate transformative player, your top five talent. That's the sort of shot that you pay a guy a max contract to hit. But if your Brad Stevens is benching Kyrie Irving for publicly making you look a fool on TV, something that you would even consider doing? Is that a move that is advantageous to the Celtics' long-term future here? Or is that something that, yeah, it's my opinion that I don't think Brad's got the juice to do it. I don't think Brad has got the cachet to do it anymore. And I think that's a problem. I think Brad Stevens used to be the star here. I think this was Brad Stevens' team for the first 4 years that he was here. And we've talked a lot this year about the players needing to make adjustments because Kyrie's back, because Gordon Hayward's back, because Jaylen Brown needs more shots this year, because Jason Tatum needs more shots this year, because Kyrie Irving needs more shots this year. So we've talked a lot about all of these players needing to make adjustments. Marcus Morris has had an incredible season that nobody could have predicted, and while that's good for him, every shot that he takes, every minute that he plays, is a shot and is playing time taken away from Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and Gordon Hayward. So you could certainly make the argument that while Marcus Morris has been the second most vital Celtic this season, I think it's pretty much known throughout Celtic Nation that he ain't coming back next year, that he is not going to be a member of this team next year. He has priced himself way out of the Celtics' ability to sign him. So when I think about a guy like Marcus Morris, yes, he's helped you win games this year, but ultimately, are the minutes that he's playing something that is detrimental to this team's long-term future? Right, so I consider all these things and all the discussions that we've had, and there's been quite a few, about this team's sort of inability to gel together because everybody up and down that roster has had to make relatively significant sort of compromises in their games in order to see this team succeed at its highest level. And they've had a hard time doing that, at least consistently thus far this season. But we haven't talked about Brad Stevens having to adjust his game and adjust his role within the organization. And I think that this is a very interesting sort of idea here. Because the best player that this team has had before Kyrie Irving got here within the Brad Stevens era has been Isaiah Thomas. And when IT got here, we're talking about a guy that was literally Mr. Irrelevant, the 60th pick in the draft, a guy that, you know, couldn't even start for a bad Suns team, a guy that was known as instant offense off the bench, but that's about it. Nobody looked at him as a MVP caliber player or an all-star level player. They looked at him as a Nate Robinson, sort of Vinnie Johnson, give me some quick offense, but don't keep me in there too long because for every 2 points I score, I'm going to give up four on the other end. That was the book on IT when the Celtics brought him here. And Brad Stevens helped turn him into what he became. But when that guy is the biggest star that your head coach has had to deal with, when he's the biggest star that the Celtics marketing department had to work with, when he's the biggest star on your team that goes to the conference finals, that still allows Brad Stevens to ultimately be the star here. It allows Brad Stevens to still, you know, have all the cachet. It allows Brad Stevens to remain the man, quote unquote. You know, he is the guy that I think drove ticket sales. He's the guy that drove optimism. He is the guy that sort of got Celtics fans super excited about this team's immediate future and long-term future because everybody believed in Brad Stevens. And it's not very often in the NBA especially where your head coach is your main attraction. But here with the Celtics, that's essentially what Brad had become. And now that Kyrie Irving is here, Brad Stevens is overshadowed. Now that Kyrie Irving is here, Brad Stevens is no longer the main attraction. Now that Kyrie Irving is here, Brad Stevens, I think, has got to adjust and change a little bit his style of coaching in order to get the best out of not only Kyrie Irving, but this team in general. And I think this year we've seen some of the learning curve that Brad's had to undergo here. And I don't think that learning curve is done. I find it interesting that the players in these lesser games against these lesser opponents, they are more willing to tune out Brad because their confidence level as players is so high, they feel like they don't need Brad. You know, we're only playing the Nets. We're just playing the Magic. Shut up, Brad. We got this. And it hasn't worked for them. Then I feel like when they play these superior teams, that's when Brad's brilliance really shines through. They pay attention to Brad. They listen to Brad because they know that they need every single edge that they can get in these games. But really, going back to what Tomasi said, the curiosity for me is, do Celtics fans that have watched the evolution of this team the last 5 years under Brad Stevens, is there any sort of legitimacy in your mind to what Tomasi threw out there? I mean, do we really believe that Brad Stevens still has the sort of cachet within this organization, has the balls within this organization to bench a guy like Kyrie Irving because Kyrie dared, you know, roll his eyes at Brad Stevens in front of his younger teammates. So we'll get into that tonight with you guys at 617-779-7937. Also, want to talk about Felger today, because Felger, talking about Brad Stevens, talking about the Celtics, you know, he throws it out there today. He used the word irrelevant. Felger said that Brad Stevens is irrelevant to the Boston Celtics right now because Kyrie Irving is here. And I won't go that far. I don't think that Brad is irrelevant. I think he still plays a major factor, a major role in what this team is trying to do. And to call him irrelevant, in my opinion, that just reeks of a guy desperate for attention, desperate for a quick headline. But isn't it funny that when you look at the face of the franchise, it was Brad that was really, you know, the face, the guy that Celtics fans thought of first the last 4 years. It wasn't Isaiah Thomas. It wasn't Al Horford. It was Brad Stevens' team. And it's part of the Celtics' problem this year. Has it been Brad's inability to share that spotlight with a guy like Kyrie Irving? And is it up to Brad Stevens ultimately as the sort of head of this franchise, as the guy that everybody looks to for leadership? Is part of that leadership an ability to conform and change and adjust to the talent that he has this year and not rely on what's worked for him in years past? And if that's the case, then maybe this pace and space, maybe this, you know, I don't know, Spurs-type offense, this Warriors-type offense that they've been trying to run in years past, maybe that isn't ideal, at least full-time for 48 minutes, with the roster that the Celtics have this year. And maybe that's been part of their problem. We spent a ton of time this year trying to identify the problems on the court. But what if one of those problems is the guy that we've celebrated more than any other Celtic in the last 5 years? What if one of those problems is the head coach and his inability to change, or his lack of experience that he should be able to draw on to tell him it is time for a change? So we'll open the show tonight talking about the Celtics. We'll get into Kyrie Irving, the comments last night, his conversation with LeBron James, and what that means for the future of this franchise. Coming up in a little while on the program, we will get into the Patriots. Tom Brady, you know, this is a big deal for Tom, a big deal for Belichick. But again, you know, Nick Wright doing his thing on TV, we'll get into him. Nick Wright really just continues to embarrass himself, essentially saying that the Patriots have no right to raise their hands and say, hey, screw you, you know, you doubted us, they can't play the underdog role. Well, they can. I don't care what Las Vegas says. Most people, Nick Wright, don't identify with Las Vegas saying that, hey, the Patriots are, you know, 3-point underdogs, but they're on the road, so therefore it's an even play. That's not how most people consider this. Most people listen to idiots like Nick Wright, or listen to guys like Stephen A., or listen to the Max Kellermans of the world. And those guys, with their hot takes, it's your fault, Nick Wright, that the Patriots feel like they are underdogs, because for every week this year, you have told us why Tom is too old, why Belichick, the game has passed him by. You've told us that this team is done. Max Kellerman has been predicting the demise of Tom Brady for, what, 4 years now? So I find it hilarious that Nick Wright takes offense to Tom Brady playing the underdog card, when really Nick has been driving the underdog train when it comes to the Patriots. So we'll get into that as well tonight on Sports Radio WEEI.
You're locked into Late Night with Patrick Gilroy on Sports Radio WEEI.
He's the boss, but he can't tell Kyrie, you're not dressing because you're out of line.
Yeah, he can.
And Kyrie's going to say,
no,
yes, sir.
Shot.
Yes, sir.
No, no way.
You can't be serious.
Yeah, I am serious.
And
I
mean,
I like
think,
the idea,
and
but
you think if
no
it
way.
Came out, if it hit the fan, that he's okay with that? Brad Stevens would say, yeah, it makes me look good?
Yeah. Yeah, it shows that he
that's,
is.
Mutt's
he is
right.
The inmates
I hate to say
are
it.
Not running
say
the
it,
side.
Say I hate
it,
to say it, Tomasi, yeah. But the little chimp over here is correct. He is right. You can't do that to a superstar.
You absolutely can. When you call out the coach in the huddle, you call out the guy who didn't pass you the ball right after the game, you call out your teammates. It's like, you're supposed to be a leader. Start acting like one. I'm not even like throwing that out there just to, you know, start a argument. Like, I really believe that.
It's John Tomasi this morning, and at first when he said it, I sort of brushed it off and said, you know, Tomasi's just being goofy. But when the guys sort of questioned him on it, he doubled down. And Tomasi's throwing this thing out there where he believes that, you know, there's this possibility that Brad Stevens may have benched Kyrie Irving after his actions in Orlando, and maybe that's why Kyrie didn't play in the Brooklyn game. It had nothing to do with a thigh injury, and had more to do with, you know, Brad saying, look, you cannot behave like that if you're going to be a Boston Celtic. I wish that that were true. I wish that Brad Stevens still had the juice to pull off something like that. And I wish that NBA head coaches were allowed to do things like that. But in this day and age, where it's about kissing the asses of these guys, especially your franchise-altering players, your all-stars, your transformative talent, those type of guys, they're so uber-sensitive. You know, and then you got guys that played in the 80s and early 90s. Those guys came from a different generation. Those guys would never pull something like that. Those guys are much more likely to grab one of their teammates by the throat in the locker room when the sort of cameras aren't running. You know, one of those guys is on TNT now in Charles Barkley, and he had some super, super interesting comments when it came to Kyrie's phone call with LeBron James. Needless to say, you know, Chuck, he wasn't a fan.
What did you think when you heard that revelation from
I didn't like it at all.
From Kyrie.
I didn't like it at all, number one. It seemed like he was saying, we're losing because of these guys. They're young. They don't know how to win. They made it to the Eastern Conference Finals without him last year. Ernie, you don't have to tell people you're a leader. Just be a leader. That kid played great last night. The assists were important. That's one of the few games I've seen where he really made a conscious effort to make everybody around him better. But this notion where I call LeBron because he taught me how to be a leader. Well, then be a leader. You don't have to tell us you're a leader. I did not like it at all because what he said to me, and I get through the BS, Ernie. Hey, we're losing because these young guys in the locker room. And I didn't like it at all.
Here's the thing, though, when it comes to Chuck. Chuck doesn't pay attention day in and day out as much as he used to. Kyrie's been calling out his teammates all season long. This is nothing new. It has nothing to do with that phone call. Actually, that phone call, in my opinion, and the outcome of the call between Kyrie and LeBron James was Kyrie's realization that he had been sort of approaching this leadership thing coming from the wrong angle. He was doing it incorrectly. You know, the fact that he had been calling out Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier, you know, that didn't work because ultimately here, what we didn't know about Jaylen Brown was that he wasn't mentally tough enough to be able to absorb that sort of criticism, especially coming from his leader, done through the media. You know, so that sort of thing is a bit of a learning curve here for Kyrie Irving. And that's the aspect of this that I find fascinating is that, you know, you look at Kyrie Irving, and I'm guilty of this as well. Kyrie Irving is a 7-year veteran. He's a guy that's feels like he's been in the league forever. He's been to the finals a couple of times. He's got an NBA championship under his belt. He's a guy that, quite frankly, you know, while LeBron James gets all the credit, matter of fact, he's declared himself the best player ever to play the game on the back of his win in 2016. But he doesn't get that win without Kyrie Irving hitting the single biggest shot throughout the NBA finals. I mean, Kyrie won that thing for LeBron James. We consider Kyrie this veteran sort of champion. And really, this is ultimately the first time in his career where he has been asked, he has been challenged, and it's ultimately his role to be the veteran leader of a basketball team. He did not have that role when he got to Cleveland. Let's be honest about this. When he got to Cleveland, the Cavaliers sucked. There were zero expectations because LeBron James had already gone off to Miami. That was a free-for-all for Kyrie Irving. He could go out there and score 20-some-odd points as a rookie. He could make the All-Star team in his second year, and it could be all about him. But he was in no way, shape, or form a leader of a franchise, let alone the leader of a franchise that had finals expectations or championship expectations, right? So when you consider that, and then you consider LeBron James coming back to Cleveland, well, now Kyrie is playing second fiddle. You know, he is Robin to LeBron's Batman, and he is not the leader of that team. He comes here last year. He didn't get to lead in the playoffs. You know, he never got to experience leading for a team that had championship aspirations. To start this year, this is really, when you think about it, the first time in his career that he started a season as the guy that people will look to as the leader of a franchise that is expected to make the NBA Finals, according to Las Vegas. So when you look at it in that prism, look at it through in that sort of context, it's forgivable that Kyrie Irving has tried to lead this team in different ways and has come up short. I think that at this point he's realized that calling out guys that are 21 years old with a year or two of experience in the media, that is not how you're going to get the best out of Jason Tatum, out of Jaylen Brown, out of Terry Rozier. And ultimately, what have we learned here for Celtics fans this year? We've learned for this team to win basketball games, they need to get the best out of those guys. And Kyrie, he is partially responsible as the leader of this basketball team for getting the best out of those guys, especially when we know when this was Brad's team, Brad was able to get the best from those guys. Now it's Kyrie's team. And isn't it funny that now that it's Kyrie's team, he's been unable to squeeze the best out of those three guys the way that Brad had last year? I find this whole dynamic super fascinating, and I don't think that it's going away anytime soon. It is Sports Radio. WEEI, it is Late Night. My name is Patrick Gilroy, talking about the Celtics. Also, starting to mix in some of your Patriots thoughts as well as we continue to inch closer to the AFC Championship game coming up this Sunday. Let's get right out to these calls. Let's go to Adam. Adam's in Kansas City. Adam, you're first up here on WEEI.
Hey, how are you guys tonight?
What's happening, man?
Oh, not much. So, I'm from Kansas City, and listen to a lot of sports talk in Kansas City, but it kind of got me curious what the general pulse around your area is on this game.
So it's funny because, look, I feel, and we talked about this last night, we'll do it again tonight, but Patriots fans are a funny bunch. So this season, the Patriots, you know this, they've been up and down. They've been dominant at home, and they've struggled on the road. And Patriots fans really, by the time this season was coming to an end, I feel like they, for the first time in a long time, they openly and willingly sort of reduced their expectations. Everybody sort of agreed that Tom had taken a step back. Maybe he was dealing with a knee injury, maybe not. But for one reason or another, he wasn't the same guy. It was clear that this team was really missing guys like Amendola and Brandon Cooks. It was clear that Gronk had taken a step back. His regression had begun. Maybe Belichick had lost his fastball. And then the Jets game happened where Tom looked like Tom again. But then you chalk it up to it's the Jets, right? And then last week, Tom looked like Tom. Belichick looked as brilliant as ever. And the team, quite frankly, played their best game of the season, maybe their best half in a few years of football last weekend. And in those two games, over the course of the last two games for the Patriots, I feel like, Adam, that Patriots fans, anyways, they went from happy to be there this year to Super Bowl or bust. So there is a bit of this overconfidence, I feel like, coming from Patriots fans right now. Look, this is going to be a super challenging game. I feel like it's going to be hard for both sides. You could certainly, you know, play up the fact that the Chiefs are dominant at home. Arrowhead is a very difficult place to play. And you haven't had, what, a road victory in one of these championship games in 5 years. So all of those things sort of point in the Chiefs' favor. But if there's one team with the right experience where maybe that sort of, I don't know, history going against them won't be a big factor, you got to admit that team could be the Patriots.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of funny, the parallels that I'm drawing, you know, between Kansas City and Boston. But the road victories for the Patriots have definitely came up in the playoffs. But another thing that I found quite fascinating is that six times in Belichick's career, he's had 40 points hung on him by a team, and half of those games were by Andy Reid.
Yep.
So there's something about that matchup that have Kansas City fans excited. I think we're cautiously optimistic because we've seen what our team has done, but we've also never had Patrick Mahomes.
So let me ask you, I want to ask you about that, about the matchup, right? So, you know, let's forget the fact that Mahomes is a rookie and he's, what, 20-some-odd years old, and Tom Brady's 41 years old, right? He's been in the league forever. For one game, you're a KC fan. For one game, for this game, if you could choose between the two guys, you know, which quarterback is better equipped to win this game?
Apples to apples right now. I like Mahomes. And some of that I'm probably looking through red and yellow glasses.
Of course you are, but that's okay. I mean, that's what we do.
But I have some reasons behind that, and that is, one, Brady's arm, and this is probably going to come back to haunt me, but it's a shill of what it used to be.
So that's interesting. Why do you say that? How many Patriots games have you watched this year?
Oh, 8, 10.
His arm is not the problem. So if you want, his arm is as good as ever. As a matter of fact, he still has just as much zip on the football as ever. He can still throw to tight spots. Don't listen to guys like Nick Wright and Max Kellerman. I'm telling you right now, Tom Brady's arm isn't the problem. What was hurting Tom this year for a 6 or 7 game stretch, and it really changed the way that he played, and I can see why you would think it could be his arm. was there was something going on with his knee. So one of the guys on the NFL Network, who's a local Boston guy that had been a Boston sports reporter for years, he had reported that maybe Brady was playing with a partially torn MCL or maybe a fully torn MCL for at least half the season. And then they had the week off. Tom said that he was as healthy as ever going into last week's game. And because of the knee injury, whatever the injury was, there was something going on with his knee. We saw it in the Miami game when he went down, that massive brace that he had on his knee. So there was something going on there. And what is Brady so good at? Yeah, Mahomes can run a little bit, of course, but and Tom can't. But Tom is better than anybody at being elusive in the pocket. But he's elusive in the pocket, meaning he can feel the pressure. He doesn't have to see it. He's got this innate ability to feel it and to step up, step to the left, step to the right, and buy himself an extra second or two. That went away for half this season. He was thrown off the back foot. He looked scared. Therefore, his arm looked like it noodled a little bit, but it didn't. Tom's arm is as strong as ever. And if his legs are healthy, that's going to present a bit of a problem for the Chiefs.
I totally agree with that. And I think as quick as he gets the ball out, it's going to be tough because Kansas City relies on that pass rush so much. And they are fierce, and we have seen that Tom does not like to get hit anymore.
No, he doesn't.
Not that he ever did, but like, so the game in probably 15 comes to mind where everybody started asking, is this the end of Tom Brady? And then they came back and probably won the Super Bowl that same year. But when he got wrecked in Arrowhead, and you could just see that threw him off his game.
No, it did. Arrowhead's been a bit of a nightmare for him. And listen, the one other factor here that I don't think Chiefs fans are really factoring in, but I will tell you this. When you look at the Andy Reid, Belichick sort of comparison and the matchup, you know, you're talking about Andy Reid having some success against the Patriots, scoring 40-plus points essentially half the time he's played Belichick. You're right about that. That certainly is a factor. But Patriots fans, they're looking at Andy Reid saying, you know, the bigger the moment gets, the more likely he is that he's going to make some sort of a critical mistake because he's got a history of doing that. I don't think history really is going to play too much into this game, but I will say that if you want to look at a Patriot player that's had a bad year, a down year, is looking like he's potentially done, I mean, that guy's Gronk, but I feel like Gronk is still capable. Look at the way that he's blocking. Look at the catch that he had last week where he sort of carried four defenders with him. That was vintage Gronk. And when you look at KC, their solution for him defensively is sort of like that 3-4 man scheme that they run. And that, I think, is going to open Gronk up. And Gronk is playing knowing he's probably going to retire. He's got nothing to lose. I think they're going to target Gronk a good 12, 15 times, and Gronk's going to have a monster game. He's going to be an X factor in this game this weekend.
I agree with that completely, and I've had that concern. One thing that helped ease my mind on that is Eric Berry's been a full participant in practice in the last two games.
Yep.
And he's probably not back up to game shape, but just the fact that he's there and we've seen him shut Gronk down before.
Yeah, we have.
And he's physical.
Yep. And that hurts Gronk.
I think it's going to be a hell of a game. Just like when you guys beat us in Foxborough this year, it was that game was just. I thought that was one of my favorite Chiefs games of the year. That and the Rams game, but I don't really have a feeling one way or another. Of course, I'd love to see the Chiefs win, but
well, of course, you're a Chiefs fan. You're in Kansas City, and listen, I appreciate the phone call. I'm up against it here, but I love this hearing from Chiefs fans tonight. I do, and that's why I gave them a few extra minutes because I love getting the feeling from the opposing city. I do, and I'm a sucker for something like that. And that guy, he was a nice guy. Like I think he was a realist. You know, the Chiefs understand the magnitude of this game, and while we're sitting here talking about Tom on his back nine, and he is. You know, even if you're one of the super Patriots fans that believe that Tom's going to play at this Pro Bowl level until he's 45 at a minimum, hell, I've heard from a bunch of fans that think that if Tom can stay healthy, he'll play at least 50. Whatever that age is, however long Tom Brady continues to play for, be it 1 year, be it 7 years, I think we can all agree that he's on the back nine of his career. And you know, I don't know how many more opportunities Tom's going to have to potentially reach and or win another Super Bowl, where this is really the beginning for a guy like Mahomes. But I feel like this is what the Chiefs fans are missing. there's going to come a point in this game where experience is going to matter. Having been there before is going to matter. There's only four teams left playing right now, and the Patriots are the team that has got the most experience to draw on, and that is going to be a factor here. And when you look at Belichick and you look at his history going up against rookie quarterbacks, first-year quarterbacks, guys like Mahomes, where really, you know, this is the opportunity for Belichick to shine once again. Now, Belichick drew up a brilliant game plan last week. For everybody that thought that he lost his fastball, I think he shut everybody up last week with the game plan that he drew up for the Patriots against the Chargers. The question is, does he have another trick, you know, up his sleeve to sort of surprise KC? And if he does, then watch out, KC. If he doesn't, and if there really is a book on the Patriots that Kansas City follows, then maybe that home field advantage, the fact that Arrowhead is a near impossible place to win in, maybe that ultimately is enough for the Chiefs to win this game. But I got to tell you, my opinion has changed, sort of my position has changed on the Patriots. It's evolved as this Patriots team has evolved. If you had asked me a month ago if I thought the Patriots had even a 20% chance to reach the Super Bowl, I would have said no. But now I'd put their percentage chances at, you know, slightly above 50%. I really believe that the Patriots in the last couple of weeks have figured something out, and whether Tom's knee is healed or they've figured out the right medication, the right treatment pregame, there has been a monumental difference in Tom's fluidity in the pocket, his ability to extend plays, his ability to, you know, dance to the left, dance to the right a little bit, to buy himself the extra second and a half. And that's why you're seeing guys like Edelman start to have Edelman-like performances, because Edelman needs that extra second to get open. And when those two are on the same page, you know, they're about as good as they get. The X factor is Gronk. If they can have Edelman and Gronk rolling like vintage Gronk can, well, then watch out, KC. But if it's just the Edelman show, then KC's defense is going to have a field day with this Patriots team. It is Sports Radio, WEEI. It is late night. I see the phone calls on the line. I promise you, when we come back, we'll work our way through them, talking about the Patriots and Chiefs coming up this weekend, talking about the Celtics, leftover thoughts from the game last night against Toronto, just a huge victory on the court, and then all kinds of stuff happened off the court with Kyrie Irving telling reporters that he phoned his old friend LeBron James, and LeBron with some sage advice. Not only advice accepting, you know, Kyrie's apology, but advice on how to better handle the Celtics. And if LeBron's advice was to empower the young guys, well, then watch out. Because, again, you know, LeBron James, he may have single-handedly helped Kyrie Irving figure this thing out, which would benefit the Boston Celtics. And I find that whole storyline absolutely fascinating. It is Sports Radio, WEEI.
Talk all Boston sports with Patrick Gilroy on Sports Radio WEEI.
I had no use for what Kyrie did because he basically used LeBron as a prop here. And his Boston teammates are not going to like this. I don't like it a bit. He's a deep dude, but he can be a weird dude. And this was weird logic that he followed to try to get out from under the mess that he made on Saturday night in Boston with his team. It was in Orlando, but with his Celtics teammates. Mm-hmm. By apologizing to LeBron for being immature and not seeing the big picture, he's trying to send the message to his younger teammates that they should do the same thing to him.
See, I'm not sure Skip's got that right. I think that this was Kyrie's sort of way to admit that he was wrong, because what he was essentially saying to LeBron was, look, I was a jerk when I was younger. I'm sorry about that. And I feel like Kyrie forgot how he behaved when he was younger and what he needed when he was younger. I feel like that was the message. And that message comes from, you know, listening to Celtics players last night, reaction today at practice. I mean, these Celtics players really took what Kyrie said, and I think they took it to heart. And when he says it on the back of a performance like he had last night, it doesn't come off as excuse-making. It comes off as reason-making, and there's a difference between the two, right? So when people are asking Kyrie questions about why the sudden rise in assists, why 18 assists, why the need, the desire to make your teammates better all of a sudden rather than make it the Kyrie Irving show, I feel like those sort of comments were apt in that moment because he got advice from his old pal LeBron, who's been through this before. So instead of looking at Kyrie and wondering sort of what's his personal sort of take in this thing, like what does he get out of this? I don't think that that was the case at all. I feel like Kyrie does that quite a bit, where he's kind of a blowhard. He loves to hear himself speak. He loves to use big words that he doesn't fully understand, so he sounds more intelligent in his own mind. He's certainly guilty of that. But that was not what we got from Kyrie last night. I feel like what we got from Kyrie last night was a guy that showed a little bit, a smidge of humility. I feel like what we got from Kyrie last night was a guy that realized the error of his ways a little bit. And that, to me, is a huge sign of his maturation as a leader. And again, you know, you want to consider Kyrie Irving a leader, that's fine. But this is the first year that he has been asked to be the leader of a team that is trying to win a championship, of a team that is trying to reach the NBA Finals. And when you look at it through those sort of glasses, look at it from that perspective, then I feel like Kyrie is certainly deserving of a couple of chances here to get it right. Maybe he's not a born leader, but because of his name, because of his stature in the NBA, and because of his ability, you know, he's the guy that needs to be this team's leader. Let's not forget that Kyrie Irving himself was the one that said about a month and a half ago that the Celtics need a leader on this team, that the Celtics need a 15-year vet to come in here and help lead this organization. And realizing that that guy is not coming in, that Danny Ainge is not going to seek out a guy like Kendrick Perkins, who can no longer play, Kyrie has been forced to elevate himself as the leader of this organization, whether he wants to or not. And I found last night the first time that he genuinely really had a come-to-Jesus moment where he realized that he had screwed up on multiple occasions with the different ways that he tried to motivate his younger teammates. It is Sports Radio, WEI. It is Late Night. My name is Patrick Gilroy, talking about two topics tonight, right? So we got the Celtics, leftover thoughts from the game against Toronto last night. Again, is this just another false start for this team, or is this something that we're going to look back at a month from now, 2 months from now, when the NBA playoffs start and say, that's the moment that the Celtics arrived. That was the moment that fans had been waiting for. Or is it just another false start, just another tease, just another sort of mark on their inconsistency that we've seen all season long? And I wonder, it's fascinating to me to sort of consider this, because we've been through this before with Toronto, with Milwaukee, with Philly a couple of times, with the Pacers about 10 days ago. Each and every one of these games, we thought, okay, the Celtics have arrived. This is their moment. This is their time. You know, all the BS from the prior months, the prior weeks, the prior days, they've figured it out. And each and every time, they've managed to let us down, let me down, let you down. Is this finally the time, now that we're 50% of the way through the season, where the Celtics have figured it out, where they have figured out how to win games and how to play for each other instead of playing individual basketball and hero basketball? I don't know. I'm the guy that's supposed to have the answers. This team has got me so confused. I've got no idea who this team is, what this team is, and who they ultimately can be. So it is Sports Radio, WEI, room for you guys at 617-779-7937. Back out to the phones we'll go. Let's go to Bill. Bill's in Malden. Bill, you're next up here on WEI.
I'd address the Celtics. I mean, I'm a half-full kind of guy, and I'm glad Kyrie addressed it now. Get it out of the way. I'm positive that the team's going to eventually. I mean, too much talent. And Danny Ainge, as a leader, is a very calming influence on that whole. I mean, you never see him or hear him throw any of these guys under the bus. He knows they're young guys. And, you know, I really feel positive about this team going down the road.
But, Bill, it's funny to me because I agree 1,000% with you on Kyrie's comments last night. I feel like they were positive comments. I don't feel like it was Kyrie trying to sort of use LeBron as a prop, as so many of these national guys have suggested. So today we've heard from Nick Wright. We have heard from Skip Bayless. We have heard from Charles Barkley. And all three have been against what Kyrie said. And what I find interesting is we took calls on this last night as well, Bill. Celtics fans that have been watching this team, listening to this guy all season long, they took it as a positive. So for those people that are watching from a distance, I can see, I guess, why they took it a certain way. But it's not the case at all. This was certainly a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, and then that's, you know, you move along from this now, because there is too much talent. This, I really believe, and again, Danny Ainge deserves credit. You don't hear him throwing anybody under the bus. But I called about the Patriots.
Sure.
No, I am so pumped for Sunday, because they're trending up, they're healthy, you know, and the anticipation of Sunday's game, I can't wait.
Well, you know, it's going to be, I feel like Sunday's going to be an awesome day around here. We've got the game. We've got the snowstorm coming, which just makes the game that much. There's something about, you know, a major storm outside, a big Patriots game on the TV. It's going to be a lot of fun. There's no doubt about that. But, Bill, what's your confidence level? Realistically, I know you're a fan.
My confidence level is 90%. I mean, when you see mic'd up stuff this weekend with guys like Bosa, How can a guy be talking like that in a game where it's life or death? He was so awed by Brady. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I saw that. And look.
I mean, it's ridiculous. And that's why I am confident on Sunday. Is you got guys on that squad that want to run people over and get this done and stick it in everybody's face.
I feel like the biggest thing the Patriots have going for them, too, is, let's be honest about this, Bill, with Brady's age, with the type of season that Gronk has had, with all the question marks that have surrounded this team for the last year and a half, they almost go into this game with a nothing-to-lose sort of attitude. The expectations...
Right, they want everything.
Of course they do, but the expectations, it's not a letdown, you know, to Las Vegas or a letdown to the national media. It's not the Patriots blowing a game like they did last year. It's none of that. None of those expectations are there for this team. So, realistically, they can sort of pull any sort of play they want, you know, anything they want to do out there, because they're not playing with that pressure that's usually on their shoulders as the favorite. That's not there anymore. So they can play free and easy with nothing to lose, and I think that makes them dangerous.
They have really timed this up again every year. You know, we worry in the first 4 weeks, and then, boom, at the end, and this is probably the healthiest they've been in one of these runs, you know, every year run. I mean, the anticipation's the best.
Yeah,
that's the best of it.
I'm with you, Bill. Man, I love the optimism. And look, it's been a long week, so I got to tell you, any optimistic people that want to sort of lift my spirits tonight, by all means, guys like Bill, you're always welcome here. Go right to the front of the line. And I got to say this, you know, he's right about the health thing, and it's something we don't talk about enough. But I feel like every year, there's a major player on the Patriots dealing with something or unable to play, right? And there's always, you look at a guy and say, only if that guy were there. You know, we had Gronk out for how many playoff games over the years? You got Hightower out for how many playoff games over the years, right? But now you look at this team, and they are trending in the right direction. As the guy that reads the updates here three times, you know, four times a show, I got to tell you, it's been no Patriots on the injury report or one Patriot on the report for the better part of the last 2 weeks, and that's awesome. And I feel like the one guy that we've been most concerned about when it comes to injuries is Tom Brady, because the evidence was on the field. He didn't look right for a prolonged period of time. The fact is, Tom's looked great the last two times out, and you can't just blame it on playing the Jets, because we heard quite a bit of that after Tom looked so good against the Jets. Everybody sort of, you know, poo-pooed that and said, nah, but you know what, let's be honest, when you look good against the Jets, do you really look good at all? But then to do it last week against the Chargers and to look as good as he did then, that tells me one thing. It tells me for the first time in a long time, Tom Brady's leg, Tom Brady's knee, Tom Brady's physical health, that is not an issue. And for the Chiefs, that could potentially be a problem. It is Sports Radio, WEI, 1 hour down, 3 hours to go, talking Celtics, talking Kyrie, talking Patriots, AFC Championship game, and anything that you guys want to add right here on Sports Radio, WEI.
Vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.